This presentation has been previously broadcast.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Woke supremacy is as bad as white supremacy. We need to take that seriously. And to all those folks who oppose good common sense, Matthew 5:44 is still available to be read in red.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was Senator Tim Scott. He said that to Fox News not too long ago. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. It's good to be with you. Don't know whether you agree with his comments. You won't believe what the woke supremacists are now saying. Math is racist. We're going to talk about that coming up. I know that's hard to get your head around, but how is math racist? We'll look at it. It's part of the culture, right? I'll present the case that's being made. So, hey, I hope you can hang out with me. We've got a lot to get into today. But as you know, we've been following what's happening on Capitol Hill and in particular with the country with a COVID bill. And just to bring you up to speed on the latest, the House voted today. They voted on $1.9 trillion of relief. And the Senate passed, of course, the Senate pushed that forward last week, but it passed. But with only Democrats voting in favor for it, just like what happened last week. So the Senate, they made some revisions to it, including Senator Rand Paul. He gutted a provision that specifically funneled money to Planned Parenthood. I just want to thank him publicly for doing that. Bravo, Senator. Bravo. What you did was right, and I'm glad. This relief bill does more than just, you know, address COVID. I think it goes well beyond that. And we'll talk about that. The Washington Post characterized this bill as a lawmaker setting. And I want to quote what they said here. Quote, aside tens of billions of dollars to fund coronavirus testing, contact tracing, and vaccine development, additional funds to help schools reopen, allow restaurants and businesses to stay afloat, and to assist state and local governments trying to meet their own financial needs. You're going to hear more of that coming up in a few moments. David Ditch is going to stop. I will also tell you what else this is going to bail out. But CNBC, they'll lay out some of the basics for you on this new plan. Listen.
The American Rescue Plan totals about $1.9 trillion. That includes the final design of the direct payments. There's expected to be around a $1,400 payments that would combine to total $2,000, and you include this $600 payment that was passed in December. The other major aspects of the bill include an extension of the unemployment insurance benefits. The House is looking at the end of August, but there may be a push for an extra month there. There will be a lot of support for the vaccination rollout and public health, which will hopefully accelerate the timetable for distribution. That's going to be really important. The other thing in terms of the K-12 support is the hope that that will accelerate the amount of time needed to reopen schools. A good portion of schools are still closed and dealing with virtual learning and all the challenges that entails. So the hope is that this is done in coordination with reopening as the public health situation improves, which is going to have a tangible impact on a lot of families and people with children right now. There is support for the paid sick leave that was originally passed this time last year for folks who may still be combating the virus, for businesses in the form of tax credits and a few other sources of support to help businesses as they continue to reopen. There is a proposed expansion to the child tax credit in this bill that will pass the reconciliation test. That will expand the child tax credit from $2,000 currently up to a maximum of $3,600 for children under the age of six. It also makes the credit fully refundable, meaning that low-income families who otherwise don't have enough income to currently collect the credit will be able to collect that credit in full, regardless of the amount of income that they earn in the form of a check from the IRS.
All right. And there's much more. I mean, we could go on and on. There's a lot in it. There's some things that I'm not happy with. Unfortunately, there's still funding in the package for abortion. Most importantly, the Hyde Amendment language is not included in the bill at all. And Archbishop Jose Gomez, he's the president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, along with several other committee chairmen, when they saw this, here's what he said, listener, what they said. He said, we urge President Biden and the leadership on Capitol Hill not to force upon Americans the wretching moral decision whether to preserve the lives and health of the unborn and the born, all of whom are vulnerable neighbors in need. Unfortunately, you know, that request went unheeded. But there's more in it, more in the bill than that. Washington Post said that it will help to assist state and local governments trying to meet their own financial needs. In fact, Nancy Lazar of Cornerstone Macro told CNBC that she believes that this stimulus plan could really just help boost up the gross domestic product. Listen.
We just raised our forecast to 9% GDP here for 2021, and that's going to be the strongest growth since 1959. Basically, nobody in the business has ever seen anything as robust as we're going to have today. Obviously, the consumer is going to be a driver of that. 10% consumer spending this year is not aggressive. The amount of savings that they have, given the additional stimulus checks, consumers, that's going to help boost consumer spending in and of itself, potentially by 20%. I mean, these numbers are surreal. We're using 10. We're assuming they do save some of it, and or it helps the economy as we go into 2022.
I'll tell you what, I hope she's right. Do I hope she's right? What they didn't say is that there are also billions of dollars going to states like New York to wipe out their deficits. New York got $12.6 billion that they're going to use to backfill their budgetary hole. And then there are union pensions. They're bailing out a lot of pensions. $86 billion are going to be sent to unions to cover the pension fund. So here to talk about it and just unpack it, help you better understand how it may impact you or your state or your future is David Ditch. He's a budget and transportation associate at the Heritage Foundation, and he's here for some perspective. David, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I just heard Nancy Lazar talk about the benefits of this with, consumer spending, saying this is robust, it's going to be great for the economy. What do you think? Will this be a real blessing? Is this going to jumpstart the economy? How do you read the COVID-19 relief package and in terms of not only support for COVID, but COVID relief, but just the economy in general?
And there's really no way to not just dump a bunch of deficit financed money at the economy and not see a short-term gain. I mean, it's essentially like if you eat a donut, you get a little bit of energy. The question is, does that mean that you should eat nothing but donuts and expect positive health outcomes?
That's great. That's such a great example. I have to remember. I love that. So where are we going to get? And here's where I step back. I mean, it's a lot of money, and I don't know whether this is generational debt. My kids and someday their kids will be paying for it. Where are we getting $2 trillion from? Well, we're already tens of trillions of dollars in debt, and that debt clock continues to tick away. Where does all this money come from?
We have to go. So this money is not money that is called, intergovernmental debt. That is debt the government owes itself. This is all money that the federal government has to go out to markets and say, hey, here's some debt bonds, please buy them, and please don't ask for too high of interest rates. And some of those investors are domestic. Some of them, a large portion of them, are foreign investors, in some cases foreign governments. And they've been very generous to Uncle Sam over the last couple of years. They haven't been asking for high interest rates. The problem is that because no one in leadership has a plan to start to stop these sky-high annual deficits, these do become structural. They're baked in. The debt keeps growing year after year after year. And if at any point, literally any point, the market says, okay, you've gone a little too far for us to keep giving you free money, we're going to have to make you, we're going to ask for higher interest rates,
right?
We're going to pay through the nose.
Wow. That's kind of a frightening thought. So I'm just curious, in terms of our country, America had one of the most robust economies in the world. Of course, COVID hits, and we see the impact it's having here. How do we as a nation, I'm curious about this, how do we compare with other nations who are now trying to jumpstart their economy too, seeing some light at the end of the tunnel with COVID and, trying to get out of the woods, so to speak? And how do we compare in particular maybe to our greatest competitor, China?
I'll be honest, I'm not an expert with the Chinese economy. Right. Frankly, it's hard for anyone outside of China to be an expert because we get our China statistics spoon-fed to us by the Chinese government, which has every incentive to make things look better than they are. It's no secret that the Chinese economy has grown robustly over the last several decades, thanks to the fact that the Chinese government is much less, controlling and constrictive of the economy than it was back in the days of Mao. But at the same time, there's a lot of reason to be skeptical about some of the pie in the sky growth numbers that they report.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I'm pro-life. I believe life is sacred from the moment of conception through natural death. And when I see in these bills money being allocated to fund Planned Parenthood, who already gets $500 million a year from the federal government, I scratch my head and I say, what's abortion have to do with COVID-19 relief? I had heard earlier when they were debating the bill that only 8 or 9% of the money was going to go for COVID relief. I don't know how that has changed proportionally now, but when I see money being funded for abortion, why do we need to send federal tax dollars to abortion clinics as a result of this pandemic? I mean, give me your take on that. I don't know where you stand on the issue.
Well, frankly, it's obvious in a bill like this, you can see that the left will take any opportunity it can to spend as much money as possible on whatever it is that they like, based on whatever excuse is handy at the moment. There is no reason for increasing spending on quote-unquote family planning activities in relation to a bill that's supposed to be justified by the COVID pandemic. There's nothing to do with it. There's no reason why we should be spending about, almost $90 billion bailing out private sector union pension plans, which has been a problem that's been, simmering in the background for decades, but that has nothing to do with the pandemic. Giving state and local governments, well, let's put this in terms of the state of Wisconsin. The state of Wisconsin, every person working 365 days a year, they produce about $350 billion. That's the Wisconsin economy. You got to take every single penny of that to pay for these state and local government bailouts, even though state and local governments already got more money last year than they would need to make up shortfalls last year and this year put together. Wow. It's absolute madness.
Wow. You're not kidding. We live in a culture that just doesn't make sense anymore sometimes. Tax dollars. Why are the tax dollars from someone, let's just say, in St. Louis? I'm sure that the person in St. Louis or in Mississippi or in Florida, wherever they are right now listening, they're saying, well, why should my tax dollars go to bail out, a fiscal policy mess for somebody in New York? I mean, I'm sure some conservative states, Arizona or whatever state you might want to pick, I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, why should we do that? I mean, why should our tax dollars go to bail out these blue states that had terrible fiscal policy?
I mean, I consider myself a refugee from New York State. I grew up around Rochester, New York, and part of the reason why I left is that I could see where things were headed. These states need a wake-up call. They need to be more financially responsible, and if we bail them out today, yeah, it means they don't have to take a close look at how they're spending their money. I'll give you an example. There's money in this bill in addition to the general state and local aid, specifically for transit authorities. The New York State Transit Authority, wow, when I ran the numbers, spends over $150,000 per employee in compensation. Now, I know the cost of living is high in New York State, but $150,000 is completely crazy. In San Francisco, it's $180,000.
Wow.
So they're complaining about budget, wow, shortfalls rather than taking a look at the contracts they're signing with these labor unions for absolutely insane, yeah, perks and wage salaries. They're saying, oh, no, this is horrible. Please give us money because we're broke.
Yeah. My heart goes out to unions in particular. I mean, a lot of these guys worked hard. They thought they were going to get a pension. And you take a look at Chicago, you take a look at New York, take a lot of these places that have pension deficits right now. It's terrible. And I really hope they had to find a way to remedy it. But my understanding is 11% of employees are actually in unions. That means the other 89% of the country that works is going to help to pay these union pensions for companies that have made these promises or these deals, or the states, I should say. That's another one of those issues. I mean, shouldn't this be a separate bill? I mean, should this really be buried in COVID relief?
Yeah, it should be a separate bill. And you're right. It's not like a union is going out and saying, okay, I'm part of this union. The union signed a contract. The contract means that there's obligations,
exactly,
and the plans should be funded responsibly. These companies, in many cases, didn't properly plan, you know, for the private pensions. If we're talking about government pensions, governments consistently fail to set aside enough money. So they're essentially saying, hey, we're going to give you these great benefits, please continue to vote for us. But then if they actually had to pay a proper amount to fund the pensions, they would have to start, you know, dealing with some real consequences of, you know, big tax hikes or having to cut spending elsewhere. And they would rather avoid those tough decisions.
Well, we're going to see what happens. This is a reality now. There's going to be a lot of debt. Are there other? Look, you and I have hit on a few. Are there other ones that stand out to you? I mean, those are the ones that really hit me kind of in the face. What other provisions are in this that maybe just doesn't make sense that people don't know? Most people don't read this. They don't know about it. They pay their taxes. What are they paying for? What other provisions are there that we don't know or doesn't make sense to you?
Honestly, the one that grinds my gears is the money that's going to, quote unquote, reopen schools. It's about $170 billion. And that amount of money, if it actually would reopen schools, that's a lot. But if it was actually going to do the job, okay, maybe. The problem is that schools are in the process of spending $50 to $60 billion that they got just in December. And analysts looking at the money say that they're going to struggle to spend this money so badly, they're going to spend more of the money in 2025 and 26 than they're going to spend this year. Well, if this is about reopening the schools, I mean, if we're still reopening the schools 5 years from now, something is seriously wrong. This, to me, is mostly a handout to the K through 12 establishment at a time when lots of school districts are not able to reopen because, you know, certain, you know, teachers unions are dragging their feet and really ignoring the science on how low risk schools are.
Yeah. Just a final thought here on all this. I mean, there's so much we could talk about. We could drill into each one of these issues. The long-term effect for those who are listening right now, I mean, I'm curious as to what it's going to do to inflation and whether or not the Fed is going to be able to control it as they claim they think they are able to do. And I hope it jumpstarts the economy. I hope we get out of the woods. I hope we lead the country, the world economically. But, you know, I do have some reservations. I'm always a little bit on the cautious side. What we'll do there, and can the Fed, you know, keep hold of the reins?
Well, if you're looking at, you know, how good is the economy doing, let's compare where we are now to where we were in April. In April, unemployment was over 14%, the highest since World War II. Now it's 6.2%. It has been absolutely plummeting. Right. The economy is growing. The jobs are coming back. We don't need this bill to get more jobs. And unfortunately, this bill, rather than focusing on economic growth, provision after provision is going to benefit political interests.
Yep. Well, look, I want to thank you for your time. This is now a reality, right? So we will see. We'll see how this all plays out in the not too distant future. David, thank you for your perspective. Of course, people can read and follow you at the Heritage Foundation. That's heritage.org. But if I know you have a Twitter account too, if people want to follow you on Twitter, how do you do that?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at David A. Ditch.
At David A. Ditch. We'll do that. Hey, yes. David, thank you. I appreciate the time. Hope to talk soon.
Yeah, take care.
All right. It's about 23 now after the hour. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, you have to stay tuned for this. You got to listen to this. Woke math. You're saying, what's woke math? Well, it might be coming to a classroom near you. Is it possible that 2 + 2 is racist? We'll look at that more. Stay with me.
We stand for the gospel, we sit for the homily, and now it's time to stand up again for the profession of faith. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 19th lesson on the Mass. On Sundays, holy days of obligation, and solemnities, the people stand after the homily and make the profession of faith, also known as the creed, because the first word is credo, which means I believe in Latin. Typically, we recite the Nicene Constantinopolitan Creed, which capsulizes the dogmatic formulations of the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD and those of Constantinople in 381. It's commonly called just the Nicene Creed. We stand for the Creed to show respect and attention for what we believe and also to honor all martyrs who died for these beliefs. If you're ever confused about what you believe as a Catholic, or if anyone ever asks you what you believe, you can simply recite the Nicene Creed for them.
One of the three pillars of Lent is prayer. So make this your best Lent yet by joining Father Rocky for the Family Rosary Across America every evening at 7 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio.
A math association, people actually committed to the teaching of math, says we need critical race theory to fight bias in mathematics. Well, maybe critical race would need the precision of mathematical reasoning to realize that the garbage they're peddling is nothing more than racism itself.
The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
On Relevant Radio.
You got it, woke math. You probably never thought you'd hear that mentioned on Dr. Duke's show in 2021, but here we are. I'm going to connect you to the craziest. Look, I've been covering this story, and I'm going to continue to try to pull back the veil. I want reason. I want rationality. I want truth. You know, I want to get a monochrome of sanity back into the classrooms and into the culture. Is that asking too much? I mean, and look, I'm not here to bring you down. Part of me sometimes doesn't want to talk about these issues. I'll be really honest with you. You know, I want to light a candle. I want to bring hope. I believe in the end we're going to have we are the greatest nation on the planet. There's no question in my mind about that. But our potential is being muted and limited right now. We have the potential to be extraordinary. And I just pray to God that we can do that, you know, that we can get some, as I like to say, some rationality back to this. And when you have conversations about woke math, 2 + 2 = what, right? 2 + 2 = how much? You got it, Patrick. 2 + 2 = 22. 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 = 4. Just a basic component of math, right? So of all the academic subjects, and there's been some crazy stuff out there, of all the academic subjects that you can mess with, you would think that math would be, you know, the least controversial of all subjects. It's just, it's objective, right? It's just plainly objective. You add these two digits together, you get the result. You divide X, you know, the X number by the Y number, you get the Z result, right? So this translates very easily into the real world. So if you're figuring out whether or not you've got enough money to buy that big screen TV, right? You look at your bank account, you look at the price of the TV, you do the math, right? It's as simple as that. Unfortunately, that's not where we are anymore. And I've talked about Saul Alinsky in the past and how part of his model to attack, to transform the culture is to infiltrate our educational systems, but both at higher levels of academia, but also we're seeing this now targeting, you know, the young, the K through 12. This is one of the strategies. So in a time where we should have rationality and objectivity, where we should have plain truth, not even math is safe from the ravages of this so-called woke mob, this critical race theory that we have. According to Cameron Hilditch, from National Review. I don't know if you read that. It's a good publication. Let me share what Cameron said. He said, progressive talking points on subjects like policing patterns and campaign finance reform, they're being used to supply students with numerical data that is then used to teach multiplication, division, algebra, and the like. He cited, you know, another author describing an initiative in Seattle as attempting to supply a framework that weaves questions of power and oppression into math instructions along with the explorations of ethnic identity. Look, it's just the latest move by the so-called social justice warriors. Just the latest move. Army veteran Jeremy Hunt, he reacted to this insanity. He was on Fox News, and he's an African-American man, very intelligent, articulate, and as somebody who is personally affected by this, he sees the ridiculous of math being labeled as racist. That's not what he said.
But honestly, I think it's quite disrespectful to the Black community what the Oregon Department of Education has done here, because basically what they're saying is they're saying that, well, we can't expect Black kids to get the right answer because that's white supremacy. So, you know, they think that Black kids aren't smart enough to get the right answer in an objective sense. Honestly, they need to read a history book. There are legendary Black mathematicians like Katherine Johnson, whose calculations helped put a man on the moon, other math and science legends, George George Washington Carver. Like, read a book. These folks used the objectivity of math as a way to achieve equality and as a way to advance themselves and their community. But here's the thing. This is bigger than just Oregon. We're seeing this kind of activity in places like Philadelphia, San Francisco. The radical left wants to racialize every aspect of your child's education. And that's the real problem here. And it's kind of this sleight of hand. They want us to be so focused on the national issues, on what's going on in the Biden administration and Congress, that we aren't focused on what's going on in our local communities.
In our own departments of education.
I thought he made great, great points. You know, look, this is just the latest move. And again, I'm trying to pull back the veil here. I'm trying to show you what is happening. I want you to see where these currents are flowing and the lack of logic or the cases that are being presented in some of them. Look, we're in a battle right now with social justice warriors. That's really what's happening in the culture. And your kids are on the front lines of it, too. Dr. Seuss, we talked about that last week. That got canceled. But just to show you how crazy this, there's a book from 2019 being promoted. Now, explain this to me. How can you cancel Dr. Seuss, but you can promote the Gay BCs? I mean, if it wasn't so bizarre, it would be comical. I mean, you almost have to laugh rather than cringe. I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, Dr. Seuss, what a classic. I love Dr. Seuss. My kids love Dr. Seuss, right? You cancel Dr. Seuss. You can't do that. Mm-mm. But let's promote the Gay BCs. That's the right thing to do. You know, the book has lines in it. If you're not familiar with the Gay BCs, which you probably aren't. B is for buy. C is for coming out. D is for drag. Q is for queer. And S is for sashay. So you cancel Dr. Seuss for supposedly being racist. But then you tell your children, oh, it's okay if you want to question your biological reality. It doesn't matter. Nah, it's fine. You have a right to do that. Yeah. Yeah. Keep your parents out of this, right? How does that even make sense? It doesn't. It does not. That's what I'm here to do. I want to light the candle. I want to try to discuss this in a rational way so we can come to a better understanding of really what the truth is. And I've invited today Dr. Teresa Farnan, who's the author, not just an author. She wrote a book called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Children. Let me rephrase that. Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. I guess you can make that plural if you have more than one, right? Get Out Now is the title of the book if you want to check it out. It is a good read. I've talked about it in the past. She's also a moral philosopher. And she specializes in the in virtue ethics, in moral education, in philosophy of the person, of gender and sexuality, of ethics issues that now face the family. And I'm proud to have her here today. It's delighted because she's on the front line of this, actually speaking truth and bringing clarity to so much of the confusion that is out there. Teresa, thank you for what you're doing. Doctor, it's such a delight to have the opportunity to unpack this with you and get your take on it.
Oh, hey, I really appreciate you having me on, and thank you for shining the light on this really critical issue. We wrote our book in 2018, and we started doing research for the book in 2016. So I can tell you these issues have been simmering below the surface, and most parents are unaware of actually how bad it is. But it is, you know, with all of the activism that's coming out, with the addition of woke math, with social justice being pushed into the curriculum, I think it's the inclusion is inescapable that our public schools are ideological training grounds to make our children into activists and progressive activists. And that is the lens through which you have to look at this in order to understand what on earth is going on. You know, and I will say, for this audience in particular, formation of children is something that's crucially important. Every minute of every day, everything they go through forms their impressionable personalities and who they are molds their character. And as Catholics, we want our children to be formed in the love of Christ and be oriented towards the good. Well, make no mistake about it. What is going on in our schools is a formation in a secular kind of religion, and it's a religion of politics and power. And our children are being trained to be the activists and the foot soldiers to advance the cause of this politics and power. And it's a move movement. It doesn't serve the underprivileged. It serves the elites.
Yeah. It's so true, and that was so well said. Who's to blame in this? I mean, what's the driving force behind it? You know, I've got a teacher. My sister-in-law teaches, public school. She's done it for 25, 30 years, however long she's been teaching. I know there's a lot of people who are listening that have loved ones that teach in that. How does this curriculum get past and become a tool of indoctrination for these particular kids? And are teachers powerless in this? Are they part of the problem? I mean, just explain to us, if you can, how this stuff is creeping into public schools, and our kids are being indoctrinated. I know we're primary educators of them, and that's our role at home to make sure you bring clarity, but boy, it's a constant battle. Your teacher says one thing, you're learning something in a textbook, and then some parents aren't qualified to really, they're not, you know, they don't know how to articulate that truth to their kids. So a couple things that are there, but go back, show me the pathway. I mean, what's the driving force behind this, and how does it reach its end goal, the indoctrination of our kids?
Sure. To go really far back, the person who sort of set everything in motion back in the 1920s was the educator John Dewey, who was a secular philosopher, but who really viewed education as an opportunity to train our children to be global citizens and to separate them. What he envisioned was separating children from their parents as soon as they stepped over the doorstep or the threshold of the schoolhouse, and then from that point on, you could mold them into the ideal global citizen.
Right.
And he was apparently so distressed by the First World War that he devoted his life to making American children into good citizens of the world. So that sort of set the stage for this idea that children, once they come into the school, are going to be shaped and molded into good citizens and citizens of the state. To understand, though, where we're coming from with activism, you really have to look at cultural Marxism and its influence from the 1940s, 1950s on in higher education, where our teachers are being trained, and where, in particular, the people who are writing textbooks, the people who are running corporations, education corporations, and the goal there is to deconstruct Christian Western civilization. Right? Huh. And how do you deconstruct that? You deconstruct it through education. We can't push in Marxism through economics because it frankly doesn't work. But you can push in all of the ancillary aspects of cultural Marxism, where you deconstruct faith and family so that these children truly are going to belong to the state. That's the 10,000-foot, philosophical perspective on this. But more immediately, I think the best way for parents to understand this is that there is educational industrial complex, for lack of a better term, to describe it. There is a corporate big education, so to speak, and it's a conglomerate of the teachers' unions, the textbooks companies, the educational consultants, all of the people who are coming in and pushing products into the public schools. Google, big tech, they've got their fingers in the pie too, and now activists. And your children are the commodity, and they're pushing all of these products in. Everybody's making a lot of money. And at the end of the day, this becomes less and less about education and more about pushing these ideological agendas.
So I
think the starkest illustration to me that our debate about education is no longer about children, but more about perpetuating the public schools is the fact that even in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic, when Catholic schools opened on shoestring budgets in big cities with failing schools, they still will not give those kids vouchers.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I'm with you on that. So I love what you said, because I think you're really true. I think you're really right on this. The end goal of this indoctrination and all that we're seeing here, from woke math to everything else that's now being taught, is the deconstruction of faith and family. And I often quote Sister Lucia De Santis, who talked about what would happen. And one of the final confrontations, she says, will all ultimately be between Satan over family and marriage. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, it's ever since, Fatima, you pointed out the 1940s, the slow trickle-down effect on all these various facets of education and culture and big tech, all pointing towards the deconstruction of Christian civilization. What do they see about Christianity that is such a threat to their end goal? Is it a monetary end? Is it atheism and socialism? Why do they see Christianity, Christian doctrine, so dangerous? Why is that such a threat to them, that they, that this is their end goal?
Yeah, let me take a step back and say it is Christianity, but it's also the family now, right? So now what we're seeing is that Christianity has been under attack in the public schools since the 1960s, but it's also now it's the family, right? So your child no longer belongs to you because your child belongs to the state in matters of sexuality, when it comes to whether or not the school can do STD tests or send them for an abortion or now facilitate a gender transition. You're no longer the parent, right? Why? Well, because if you think about how the goal of this is to take all of our children and turn them into foot soldiers for a secular state, what stands in the way of that? The family. Because the family is always, you know, if you think about the Catholic doctrine of subsidiarity, we support the most basic level of, you know, basic unit of human socialization, for, you know, lack of a better term, which would be the family, because the family protects the individual and it protects the vulnerable. You get the family out of the way and you know, the state can do whatever it wants with children. Right? It can make them, mold them into the kind of citizen activist that it wants. And I really think we have to look at all of these things that are happening, not as separate phenomenon, right? We can talk about woke math or, you know, the latest thing, Jane Robbins had an article in The Federalist about social emotional learning and how that's being used to push in the idea of equity instead of equality and to turn our children into change agents and activists, to make them angry and then channel the anger into to action and then activism. But at the end of the day, really, I think the best way to understand it is to consider that the primary social unit that protects the vulnerable is the family. Yeah. And when the family is out of the way, there is nothing to protect the individual from the power of the state. And if this is all about power and, you know, making people into, molding them into citizens to serve a secular good, well, the family, and especially the Christian family, stands in the way because it says, you know, we serve a higher God. Our God is not corporate profits. Amen. Our God is not the state. Our God is God Almighty. And these children belong to God, not to the state.
Well, love it. My guest today, Dr. Teresa Farnan. If you want to join us, I'm going to open the phones. Love to have you join the conversation. Maybe you work in public schools. Maybe you're in, you know, levels of higher academia. Maybe you see this. Maybe you disagree. I mean, we're open to dialogue. Always good to hear from you. The number here, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. She's the author, by the way, if you want to get her book, Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. We're talking woke math, and we're going to take your calls and more when I return.
Tweet us your prayer intention anytime on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show. The faith, news of the day, politics, economics, and family issues. It all matters to you, and it matters here, too. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We'll do it live.
Well, thanks for joining me. I'm going to grab your calls. Thank you. If you're on hold, I'll do my very best to get you on. It's good to be here with you today. Always a delight to take a look at life through the eyes of faith. And look, I really am enjoying this conversation. You know, my guest is Dr. Teresa Farnan, and she wrote a book called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public Schools Before It's Too Late. I invited her on to talk about woke math. I do want to touch on that because it's insane. I don't know how, you know, racist theory gets tied up with 1 + 1, you know, equals 2, but we can talk about it. But her points, what she's saying, what's the end goal of all of this wokeness, of this this ideology, this attack on our kids? What's it all about? The goal, she says, is to deconstruct faith and family. It's ultimately about the deconstruction of Christian civilization. That, you know, if you can take the family out, if you can attack the family, if you can remove the shield of the family, then there's nothing to protect you, the individual, from the state. That's the end goal You don't hear too many people talking like that. You don't hear that message. And I hope that's why you tune in. I hope if you enjoy this conversation, you'll then share it with others. When I sign off today, Jake will put the show up, hour one of today's broadcast, share with others. But let's talk woke math for just a moment, okay? Like, what's woke math? Dr. Duke Pesta from the Freedom Project sounded off. He's been a guest on this program in the past. Listen to what he had to say. This is his co-host, actually, who started off the commentary. Listen.
The Old Gold and Black, the school newspaper, actually wrote an article called Anti-Racism Comes to the Math Classroom. And so they explained how there's a new one-credit course offered at the Wake Woke Forest University, and it's in the Department of Mathematics and Statistics, and the students, they're going to learn about the many ways in which mathematical and statistical models have been employed to, you know, foment racism.
Do you understand what they're doing here? They've created a non-mathematics course to lecture kids about this. This is the same thing. This is like saying, taking kids in elementary school and teaching them their ABCs, right? You got the little strep banner on the top of the chalkboard, and the kids are learning their ABCs. That would be like stopping once a week and giving the kids a one-hour lecture on how people take language to say racist things. Yeah. It's not the fault of language that people misuse it. It's not the fault of math that some morons try to misuse it. Math, the sociology of math is not math.
Oh, silly. Isn't it? It's crazy. My guest, Dr. Teresa Fartin. Doctor, we have to talk about this just for a moment. Then I want to jump into the phones. Angela and a lot of other people are waiting to talk with you. How can math be utilized for an ideological agenda? I mean, has it ever been done before? Give me your perspective on the zaniness of this.
Honestly, to me, this represents the end of reason, really. And I find it ironic, actually, with woke math. One of the things in Oregon, for example, they said, we need to stop insisting that students get the right answer, remember? And if you remember, in 1984, by the end of the book, after Big Brother, after the main character has been worked on by the state and has finally come around to submission, what is the equation he's writing? 2 + 2 = 5, which represents finally giving over his reason to the state. It's such a disservice to children. And frankly, honestly, if you remember the phrase George Bush used to use, the soft bigotry of low expectations, come on. Children from all ethnicities and all races, I have met so many intelligent people who are from just span the all ethnicities and races. And how insulting is it to insist that we need to stop trying to help children learn habits of accuracy because of their race or their ethnic background. You will hold these children back the rest of their lives.
Well, we've got several people on hold. Some work in public schools. Love to hear from them. Angela's been holding along. She's in Southern California, and she wants to join the conversation. Hi, Angela.
Hello, how are you?
We're great. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add to the conversation. I definitely see that it begins in school. And my kids actually didn't go to public school until, one of them never went. And she is actually the most, she went to school up until ninth grade. And then she was in public school. And then she worked for schools, higher education. Yeah. And she has totally been indoctrinated in liberalism. Yeah. She is the most liberal young adult I know. And she helped me teach confirmation when she was a senior in high school. She would go to adoration during high school. We're a very Catholic family. I homeschooled her younger sisters. But unfortunately, they may not be as much of an activist as she is. But they are the three younger ones are all following suit.
Yeah.
And I see it as the teachers may say that they're not teaching this kind of thing, but they talk about their personal lives and they talk about their personal beliefs during class.
Yeah. Angela,
and so even though they may be taking a regular math class, that math teacher will definitely show their stripes.
Angela, you bring up a great point. Let me let Dr. Farnan respond, because we were having an off-air conversation about this, because I think you're really onto something here. And we were talking, Doctor, about the role of teachers. And to Angela's point, you see what happened there and how the other kids may not be as active, but clearly their thought processes are changing. The role of teachers, I know there's some great teachers out there. I don't want to throw every teacher under the bus here because I never like to broad brush. But to Angela's point, I mean, what role do teachers play in this? And you know, maybe give us some perspective on that point.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously there's a lot of variety among teachers, and I've known some, I mean, I have family members who have been public school teachers and family members who work in education. But here's the problem. The problem is right now there is an orthodoxy that's being enforced in the public schools. And so these students never hear anything other than the progressive mantras that are being pushed in under the lens of social justice and ending white privilege and everything else. And the teachers who might share your beliefs, they do not feel free to say anything in the classroom. So there is one perspective that is going to be presented in these public schools. And activist teachers feel very free to share their opinion. And teachers who don't share that are silenced, as are children, right? So in California schools, if, you know, there may have been some really strong, rock-solid Catholic students there along with your daughter. And guess what? They probably were totally afraid to say anything because as soon as they spoke up and expressed any opinion to the contrary, they would be silenced, they would be dismissed as a racist, they would be marked by all of the other children, and they would be marginalized by the teachers. So this is part of the problem. The problem is we no longer have free speech, and there is an orthodoxy. This is why I referred to this as really as a religious movement in a sense. It's this religion of not just secular humanism, but now we have intersectionality and activism and critical theories being pushed in as religious movements. Yeah. And anyone who speaks up is the heretic and will be banished.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, Angela, for your patience and for your comments. Mary in Illinois. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Drew? I love listening to you instead of that family.
Thank you.
I literally have, I think, 3 minutes, and God bless you. So I'm a parent of the district I'm working in, and my kids are all adult children. I think I'm going to really talk my kids into sending their kids to a Catholic school. Don't get me wrong, I think there's some really wonderful people, Christian people, who are teachers in the public school.
Yeah, of course.
Including myself, but I do see the curriculum driven by the government, and the teachers seem to be, they obviously don't have a choice, but there's such passion about some of these subjects we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Nothing extreme, believe me. We're a very conservative suburb. But a whole series done on racism, and in which I think is, I love the conversation. I love the books they're reading, we spend half the year on it.
Yeah.
And I want them to learn about Civil War, you know. And I'm talking probably out of turn here, but because I don't know enough about it, but Dr., I now look at my adult children, and they're in some liberal companies. And I told them to Google Christian companies, Catholic companies. Is there anything such as that out there? I mean, they're through at school.
Right.
I'm done making those choices. Now I'm thinking about my adult children who are conservative and want to work in a less liberal environment.
Yeah, that's great. Mary, let me ask you to hold for just a second here. Doctor, we only have about a moment or two left. I want to let you have final thoughts, and I also want people to know about your book and a website. We get a chance to talk about this, but personandidentity.com, if you want to learn more, check that out. But final thoughts from you, Doctor, as we're getting close to a heartbreak here.
Yeah, if I could say one thing to leave with your listeners, I know people always say to me, Catholic schools aren't perfect, and they'll cite this Catholic school that did this, that. But I'll tell you what, right now we have a delivery system that can help us to shape our children in virtue. So, you know, any of you listeners who are looking for a good cause to support that can help to change the culture of our country and to help defend the family, you got to get out there and support these Catholic schools. These schools are dying on the vine. They're closing, you know, dozens of them are closing every single year, and they need that support. And that is what is going to save our culture.
I really do. Doctor, thank you. I've enjoyed our conversation immensely. I love your eloquence and the clarity that you brought to this. Dr. Farnan's book is called Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. You can check out her website, too, personandidentity.com. The Chapel to Divine Mercy is straight ahead.